I have to say, it's wonderful to hear this new recording of the Bach Cello Suites.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This is sort of the one we've all been waiting for, you know.
Wow, I'm flattered.
Yeah. Well, because for folks who don't know, of course, you play that remarkable cello that was once owned by Pablo Casals, the 1733 Gofriller. And Casals, I mean, I can tell the story. It's probably much better if you tell the story of how he brought these suites really to the world with his recording in the 1930s to begin with.
Yeah, so Pablo Casals, if anybody don't know, he was probably the greatest cellist of the 20th century, if not all time. When he was a child, his parents took him to a regular music shop in Barcelona, where he grew up in Catalonia. And he found this book of Bach suites. And that book of the suites is still still exists, and it's in the Casals Museum, which was his house. And you can see it on the music stand, and it's exactly as it was when he bought it and when he placed it on the music stand. So when he was a child, at the end of the 19th century, he started practicing those suites. And that was sort of a common practice to do for cellists. One of the etudes or exercises, I should say, one would do would be to play the Bach suites at home in a secret room where nobody hear it, because they were considered just exercises. Well, for Casals, who became such a great musician and humanitarian, and not just a cellist, so much beyond just being a great cellist, the suites had much more in. And the much more was the music, the art in it. The art form that was there was something that Casals felt was never addressed before. And in 1915, I believe, it was the first time that he decided to perform them. And on his American tour in 1915, he placed one of the suites, the third suite in C major, and played it all through the tour. It was a 3-month tour. One of the stops was in Baltimore at Peabody, where I teach. And in fact, one of my students found that program from February 12, 1915, wow, where Pablo Casals played the suite on stage. It was unheard of before. So he performed the suites, all six of them. And in 1936, he felt that it's the right time not only to perform them, but to record them and to make a statement to the world and for generations to come that those suites should be performed on stage. They have so much music in it and so many emotions that the public should know about them, and not just few cellists who dare practicing them. And he recorded them in 1936 on this cello, the cello that I now have and the cello that I used to record the suites on just a few months ago. So this is quite an amazing story, because after that recording, every cellist that considers himself as a serious cellist makes a recording of the suites, and you can imagine how many hundreds of them are in existence.
Yeah, but only a couple of them with this cello.
Only two of them by now. And I'm hoping, I'm saying it in a very sincere way, I'm hoping that the next driver of this vehicle, as I like to call it, will record the suite again, because, you know, the part of why I got the cello is to show the world that we are passengers and we just pass through, but those instruments, those great glorious instruments, they stay here forever. And we just look at them, we acquire them for a few years, we do what we need to do with them, which is to find our voice within them, and then we move on. We let other people do it. So it's just an amazing story, I think, to think that this cello was made in 1733 in Venice and was played all through history. And Casals bought it in 1908, played on it, found his voice through it, recorded the suites in 1936, and then many, many years went by. And in 2019, just a young kid from Israel, from a kibbutz in Israel, got to record these suites on the same cello. It's just, I think, amazing, as a story. Maybe one day it will be a Hollywood movie, and I will just be one of the characters, but there will be more.
Well, there are so many things to talk about wrapped up in this cello and in the music as well. It's no exaggeration to say that 1936 recording really grabbed a lot of people who maybe didn't think of Bach as a expressive, romantic composer on that level, because the suites themselves are just, you know, remarkably full of emotion and as well as expressivity and potential for expressivity. I think that it changed it for everybody, the way that they listened to Bach and certainly the way they played Bach.
Yeah, and well, first of all, you have to give the credit for that to Casals himself. It's not just the music. The music was there before, but nobody like Casals took them. It's like a text, you know, you take a text by a great writer and you didn't know that there's so much emotion until a great actor or a great director comes in and explore the possibilities, the emotional possibilities of the text, and all of a sudden it becomes something that everybody thinks is great. And with Bach, it's a little bit similar. You know, when you go back just 100 years before Casals makes a recording, when you go to Mendelssohn's time, Bach was forgotten. His music was forgotten. Nobody played Bach, period. But then Mendelssohn, who was a conductor of the Gewandhaus Orchestra in Leipzig, he adored Bach simply as a composer, and he would sit down every day and copy his music, just copy it, just to learn. And then he decided, well, I have the greatest orchestra in the world in that time, the Gewandhaus Orchestra. I conduct them, I program the programs, and he brought Bach to the fourth. And people were shocked. Are you performing this composer, this forgotten composer? And Mendelssohn is responsible to bring back to life Bach. And then 100 years later, here is Casals bringing the cello suites to life. And now Bach is what Bach is, the greatest of all. So it takes a great personality, like in any other field, to bring up something to life and or to reinvent something or to recompose it, you can even say. And that was a job of Casals, not knowing that he did it, but that's exactly what he did. Now, when we have perspective of time, we can easily say that he brought it to the front of the line. And not only that, by recording the suites, Pablo Casals brought the cello to be one of the soloistic instruments of the 20th century, along with the piano and the violin, which was not the case before. So we owe a lot to him, you know, not to put pressure on me and my humble recording that came in 2019, coming now on February 1st. But I had all this in mind before I decided to make this recording. So you can imagine the pressure and the responsibility. And that's why I waited a little bit. I've had the cello for 6 years, and I really wanted to wait before I feel comfortable to call it my own.
Well, that was my next question, because we have spoken before in a couple of other recordings that you've done with this cello, and we've told the story of how it came into your possession, and I may ask you to, you know, kind of reiterate that again for folks who don't know, but you did wait a while before you went back to these, and you know people are going to listen to your recording of these suites, and they're going to go back and they're going to listen to the Casals as well. I mean, you can't avoid the comparisons.
Of course.
So was that in the back of your mind as you were recording these, that people are going to compare you, obviously, with Casals' performance?
Well, I knew all along that whenever I touch this cello, since day one that I got it, there will be a natural comparison between people. But what Marta Casals told me when she gave me the cello was, two things. One, I want you to share the legacy of the maestro, as she refers to him still. And two, I want you to find your own voice with it, which I couldn't really understand and grab in the first months or so when I got it. But when I started performing with a cello, I realized what she said, and it really made sense that if you learn how to play those instruments, they're magnificent. It's not just the Casals cello. It's the Casals cello and the Stradivarius of Rostropovich and so on. Those instruments do not sound like they're the people who played them. They make the people that play them sound great if those people know how to play them. So I realized that if I will learn how to play this cello by not disturbing it, by not playing it as I would play a modern instrument, as I would play an instrument that I will have to push in order to make the sound come out, that cello will allow me to find my own voice, and which is not Casals' voice. Now, as much as I adore, and I do adore, the Casals recording, and it for me stands still as the best of all time, I needed to get away from it, and I stopped listening to it and to any other Bach recording for quite a few years before making this recording, because I wanted to go away, to get away from that sound and to really find my own sincere, honest sound within this recording. I can only say that I hope I did my best job finding it. The audience will have to judge if they feel the sincerity in it, but I can say from my point of view, sitting behind the cello, that as a driver, I drove it the best way I could as me and not as anybody else.
I heard an interview with you where you talked about Casals and pointed out the fact, and I had never thought of this, of course, that he didn't have a reference point when he was recording, when he was making that recording in 1936. He didn't have other cellists mm-hmm. playing the piece. He didn't have anybody in his ear. So he had the freedom to be original with his performance.
That's true. And we only feel that when we make a premiere of a new commission piece these days, because everything that we play today, not only that we heard, you know, in Bach's time, if you would hear a piece, you would actually hear it in concert, and then that's it. The sound dies at the end of the concert. You cannot put the LP or the CD or download it afterwards. So you would have to go to concerts or to go to a live performance in order to hear a piece and to know it. The other way to do it would be to read the score and to imagine it. For us, the generation that I have grown in and the people that I teach these days, this doesn't exist anymore. We have a pre-knowledge of how pieces, quote-unquote, should sound like, because we have so many recordings of it, and we have so many live performances, and we have so many YouTube links of it, and so on, that if you want to be original, either you premiere a piece that nobody played before you, or you teach yourself, as an actor would do, how to make a part of Henry the Great or Romeo and Julia. How can you do it without thinking of the part that you have seen on video or you've seen in theater? That's not easy to do. You have to work on yourself to get away from what you know and to find something new. So it's not simple to do, and it's maybe not possible 100% to do. But for Casals, and that's what makes it so unique, is that he didn't have anybody in his ear, because nobody, absolutely nobody, played those suites in concerts.
Well, let's talk about your specific interpretation of the suites. I heard you say that, you know, the first suite that everybody knows, the most famous one that has been heard far and wide, mm-hmm. you talk about that saying that it was the most difficult because it was the most simple. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, so before that, we have to understand that the suites in Bach's time, they were already not played. So the suites are a group of dances, basically. You're a DJ. Your mm-hmm. job is to make people dance. Mm-hmm. The prelude, which you refer to of the first suite, the most famous one, prelude is where the man of the house, the man of the party, would come down to the band and basically tell the band, okay, today I feel like springtime, or today I feel sad, or today I just won a war, I feel very heroic. And the musician will flip around the big book of suites and find the right key, like C major would be heroic, G major, like the first suite, would be more spring-like, D minor would be a sad one. And they would find the right character in order to make people dance in it. And then people would be around them, having a drink and an aperitif and talking to each other like in a reception or a wedding reception. And during the prelude, they would still talk to each other. But the prelude will give them that enough time and will show them the character of what the dances are going to be like tonight. And then comes the group of dances, the Allemande being the German dance, the Courante being the French or the Italian dance, Saraband being the Spanish dance, and the Jig being the English dance, and so on. And the musician would be the DJ that will make the people dance. So when Bach wrote it for cello, of course, cello alone would not make people dance. But I, as a performer, have to think of it as, okay, my job now is to be a Baroque time DJ. And that's what you have to have in mind. And then you have to figure out, okay, G major, first suite, looking forward, what does this mean to you as a performer? What do I want my public to dance for, to dance to today? And that's where your personality or you being your own director comes in, as if it would be a film or a theater piece. How would I want these people to dance? And now coming back to your question about the first suite, I feel that the G major one is sort of, there are two characters that I deal with when I play it. One is really the feeling of springtime, smile on your face, first day after winter where you have the birds singing or the sun coming out. It's a very happy day, and that's G major. But at the other hand, when I recorded it, and that's something that happened to me only during the recording, I felt for the first time that the G major prelude, I left it for the end because it's so difficult to create that simplicity, that feeling of looking up, that feeling of smile. And instead of that spring-like, I felt like birth. I felt that I'm standing in the hospital and the doctor is handing to me one of my three kids. My real kids. I really felt that moment, which it's one of the rare moments in my life that I cried like a baby, more than the babies that came out. In fact, my wife can attest to it. Yeah. I had a dream for all three kids. My dream was to sit there and to play the prelude of the first suite. I'm not kidding, but she didn't let me. So I couldn't bring my cello. And in fact, now knowing how it went, I would never dare playing the cello there with all the doctors and all that. But I had this feeling that playing the prelude for my baby when they come out would be the most great thing for them when they come into this world, just to hear da-da-dee-da-da-da-dee-da-da, to hear that feeling of birth. And I felt that when I played it. And I think what happened to me in that recording is that what you hear on this recording is the first time I played it in that character. I've never played it like this before. And the engineer and I decided to keep it because it was so honest and it was so at the moment that we thought this is it. That's what we want to keep. And I'm very happy about it.
Yeah, and I also have to say, having heard you talk about it that way, I need to go back and listen to it again with that in mind. I mean, the way that the cello is captured is just glorious, and it's wonderful to hear that dark, burnished sound of this cello in particular performing those suites, because, of course, the 1936 recording is not, you know, on the same level technically as what we have today. So it's sort of like the light breaking through.
Exactly. And I have to tell you that this is the fourth CD I've made with this cello, and I've made many documentaries with it on videos on YouTube and so on. And I've never taken with the engineer so much time before the recording to find that sound that is completely the cello and not us, and not us trying to interfere with it. And it took us, in fact, 4 hours. The first half of the first day was just to try. Normally when I make a recording, I trust the engineer so much that I don't want to listen because it drives me crazy. And then I go away from the artistic side of it. So I always tell the engineer, whom I trust very much, and we've worked together many times, you know, you make the decision, just let me be a musician. But in this CD, I did go back and forth to the booth where he was with all the computers, and I asked to listen to it. And we went back and forth so many times because I wanted to find that sound that I think is the sound of this cello, which is very human, deep voice of knowledge, voice of experience, voice of humanity, sort of to say. And it took us a long time because one take we did and then it sounded too scratchy or too nasal or too this or too that. And then he added some reverb and it sounded awful and not realistic. So it took us a long time. And when we found it, he not only made signs on the floor, which we usually do so we know where to put the microphones, he made a whole map of it so he will remember. If we ever want to capture that sound again with this cello, not just for me, but for future generations, if they want, so we know the exact microphone and the location and all of that in order to preserve that sort of like museum-like sound of this cello. And we hope, we can only hope that people will feel what we felt when we capture that sound.
Well, I definitely hear it in listening to it. And I think people will be listening to this recording, you know, 100 years from now, the same way they listen to Casals.
Oh, I hope so. Thank you. This is a big compliment.
Yeah. Amit Peled, cellist, performing music of Johann Sebastian Bach. You've got the first suites on volume one, right? First three. And then the second three will be your volume two.
Yeah. So there's another philosophical reason here as well, since I strongly believe that there's a journey here. and the first three suites are sort of looking forward. You have birth, and you have childhood, and you have early days. But the fourth, five, and six are looking back in life, and one needs to have perspective to it. So I made the decision, because normally people just do two CDs at once, and it takes 3-4 days, and you're done with it. But I wanted to leave a little bit after the first three suites. I want the last three suites to be same player, same cello, but a little bit different experience of life before I put them on record. So, of course, it's going to be just a few months, but I do want to perform them separately. I do want to keep traveling. I do want to keep educating my kids. I do want to keep living with my wife and dealing with my students and just being myself for a few more months before I look on them and try to look back rather than look forward.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, we look forward to that as well.
Thank you so much.
Cellist Amir Peled, thank you for joining us, talking about this new recording of Bach. And as always, best of luck. I look forward to our next conversation here on FM 91.
Thanks a lot.